You do not need to keep it together. You do not need to stay strong. You do not need to avoid your emotional reaction. You do not need to stuff down your tears. Experience your emotions, feeling vulnerable or maybe even weak, or feeling tearful. This is being human, and it is to be expected under the circumstances. In fact, it would seem insensitive not to experience all, or at least some of these responses. So in essence, stay present.
Hello and welcome to How to Deal with Grief and Trauma. My name is Natalie Himmelrich.
How to Deal with Grief and Trauma is completely self-funded, produced and edited by me, Natalie Himmelrich. Consider making a small donation to support the podcast. Go to bit.ly/support, capital G, capital T, and podcast. I repeat, bit.ly/support GT podcast. Thank you so much. And for more information, please visit Natalie's website, join the podcast Instagram page, and subscribe to the newsletter to receive updates on future episodes. Welcome back to How to Deal with Grief and Trauma, the place where we dive deep into the heart of human experiences, bringing light to the things that shape us, break us, and ultimately make us stronger. Today's episode is a profound journey into a topic that is dear to my heart, person-centered grief and trauma support. It's another solo episode with me, your host, Natalie Himmelrich. And just to start you off right, I highly recommend downloading the 33 steps guide from my website, a simple guide that will teach you to feel supported or to give support while grieving. It contains the collection of wisdom from my latest book, Bridging the Grief Gap. So if you want to find out more about it, check it out on my website. Grief and trauma are universal experiences, yet deeply personal. Each journey through them is unique, but one thing remains constant: the need for empathy, understanding, and support. Today, together, we're going to explore the challenges faced by those navigating those tumultuous waters and the people besides them, offering insights and strategies for meaningful support. So whether you're on the side of supporting someone or whether you're in fact grieving or dealing with a trauma, welcome, you're in the right place. Grief and trauma can upend lives in the blink of an eye, leaving a lasting impact on those affected. The first step in supporting someone is understanding that grief and trauma are not linear. They are complex, cyclical processes that can involve a wide range of emotions and reactions. For example, acceptance, anger, denial, depression, they can be all part of this journey. So recognizing the complexity is crucial in providing person-centered support. For those experiencing grief and trauma, the challenges are multifaceted. There's often a sense of isolation, as if no one else can truly understand what you're going through. There's a struggle with overwhelming emotions, the difficulty in performing daily tasks, and sometimes there's guilt for needing help or simply surviving. When I lost my younger twin daughter, I felt as if I was the only person dead, has just given birth to twins and one died. In the time after, I fully understood that there is not just me, there is actually many people who have this kind of loss. And it will be the same for your specific kind of loss. Yes, there's always differences, but there's also more similarities than you would expect. Moreover, societal expectation can pressure individuals to move on or get over it quicker than they're ready for. This can lead to feelings of inadequacy or further isolation. I can recall many clients of mine that said, "Why isn't this over yet?" or "Why do I still feel so bad?" And this is not because what they're feeling is wrong or too long. It's mostly because of society's expectation and what they have incorporated in themselves that tells them I should be somewhere else than I am right now. Navigating your own path through grief and trauma requires patience and self-compassion. It's about recognizing your needs and allowing yourself to feel without judgment. Now, this might be easier said than done, but this is why so many people want to find help either through a grief specialist, a grief educator, or through a podcast like this. Establishing a routine or like seeking professional support and finding small ways to engage with joy can be foundational steps in this healing journey. Now, there's many stories on the podcast where people explain how they dealt with grief and trauma, and you can find out how they found the joy again after most horrendous kind of losses. It's also about setting boundaries around your healing process and communicating these to the people around you. You know, it's okay to say no to certain conversations or situations that you're not ready for. If you need someone to help you advocate for yourself, go and find a trusted friend or therapist to help you find the right words to say no or to create your boundaries. Navigating through grief and trauma is deeply personal, as I said before, and it's a challenging journey, unique to each individual. However, there are strategies that can help people support themselves through the difficult time. Self-support involves acknowledging your feelings, practicing self-care, and seeking connection and support when needed. So let's go through them step by step. So here's how someone can embark on a path of self-support in dealing with grief and trauma. First, acknowledge your feelings. The first step in self-support is to acknowledge the spectrum of emotions that grief and trauma can elicit. Mostly people experience emotions in the intensity they've never felt before. As I said before, this may include sadness, anger, confusion, guilt, shame, relief, among many, many, many others. Allowing yourself to feel these emotions without judgment is crucial. Understanding there is no right way to grieve or navigate trauma can help you accept your own unique process. And just a small word about comparison. Comparison only helps if you feel they support you. But if you find that you're not doing good enough dealing with grief and trauma, or that you're not far enough or healthy enough or crying enough, if it's putting yourself down, it is usually not so helpful. 2, create a self-care routine. As I said, self-care is paramount when dealing with grief and trauma. This means taking care of your physical needs. For example, eating nutritious food, getting enough sleep, and engaging in physical activity. Additionally, self-care also encompasses activities that nurture your emotional and mental health, such as meditation, journaling, or creative expression through art or music. Establishing a routine that includes these activities can provide a sense of normalcy and stability. In episode 18 and 19, both my guests, Miten and Joy, they share how they used music and art to deal with their grief and trauma, as well as Clover in episode 28, who used to ride and still actually is a rider to this day. 3, seek professional help. Grief and trauma can sometimes be too overwhelming to navigate alone. So seeking the support of a therapist or counselor trained in grief and trauma can provide a safe space to express your feelings and begin the healing process. Now, some of you might wonder, how do I find the right person? This is a trial and error. There's many websites out there, but you can find someone, but you have to try it out. Give it 1 to 3 sessions and see what that means to you, how you feel you connect to the person. Because professional support can also offer you coping strategies tailored to your individual needs and experiences. I urge you to look out for someone who is grief literate and trauma informed. You can find out more about what those terms mean on my website, for example. So Megan, for example, in episode 41, she shares how she, as a grief therapist, dealt with grief and trauma when she lost both her parents, one after the other, in a short time span. Also check out Tori from episode 39, who regularly shares on her hugely popular social media channels, specifically IG, how therapy has supported her in her grief and throughout her life. 4. Connect with others. While the journey through grief and trauma is personal, connecting with others can provide comfort and a sense of belonging. This might include friends and family, support groups or communities of individuals who have gone through similar experiences. In fact, science has found that we heal in community. There's a whole stream of teaching called polyvagal theory, using ways to nurture your nervous system, to regulate your nervous system, and that is really impactful in terms of your healing in co-regulation, which is what you have experienced as a child, a baby with your mother, which is where you learned how to regulate your nervous system. Sharing your story and listening to others can foster a sense of empathy and understanding, and it reminds you that you're not alone. Just like me, when I first lost my younger twin daughter, I thought I was the only one, and actually I found a whole community through social media, through Facebook, of lots of people who've experienced something similar. You can find dedicated groups to different types of losses searching the internet or on Facebook. I've created a group on Facebook for grieving parents that has been operating for more than 10 years, where lifelong connections and friendships have been formed. And you can find the link and any other links for groups like that on my website. 5. Set boundaries. I've mentioned that before, but it's important to recognize and communicate your needs and boundaries to those around you. This might include needing space at times, limiting conversations about your trauma or grief, or specifying the type of support you find helpful. Setting those boundaries can help you feel more in control and reduce potential stressors. You know, it's actually not helpful to overwhelm the system with too intense grieving, which is not to say not to avoid it altogether, but you have to find the right amount for the system to be able to integrate grief back into your life. 6. Practice mindfulness and gratitude. Mindfulness techniques such as deep breathing, meditation, and yoga can help ground you in the present moment, providing a break from the pain of grief and trauma. Practicing gratitude, even for the smallest things, can shift focus from loss and pain to appreciation, fostering a sense of peace and well-being. And with that, I don't mean just the platitude of I'm grateful for three things, but really looking for those embers of light that shine through the cracks. If you want to listen to Estelle in episode 32, she literally said, "Yoga saved my life." She's a really bright light and has lost her young boy, I think it was 4 or 5, so check out episode 32. Allow yourself to seek joy is number 7. So finding moments of joy or pleasure might seem impossible or even inappropriate during grief and trauma. However, allowing yourself small moments of happiness does not diminish the validity of your pain. So it's not replacing grief with happiness. It's not or, it's and. So whether it's through hobbies, nature, or laughter, seeking out and embracing these moments can be vital, a vital part in your healing process. And the amazing example of that is Amber, a young widow of 4 children, sharing her story in episode number 27. Number 8 is remember that healing is non-linear. Healing from grief and trauma is a non-linear process. There will be good days and bad days, steps forward, step backwards. Reminding yourself that this is normal, a normal part of healing that can help mitigate frustration and self-criticism. Each person's journey is unique, I can't say it enough, and it's okay to move at your own pace. Supporting oneself through grief and trauma requires a balance of acknowledging your pain, practicing self-care, seeking external support, and gradually finding ways to incorporate moments of joy and gratitude into your life. By embracing these strategies, individuals can navigate their path towards healing with compassion and resilience. Let's have a look at the challenges for supporters. For friends and family, the desire to help can sometimes be met with uncertainty. How do you offer support without overstepping? One common challenge is the fear of saying the wrong thing, which can lead to silence or distance, exactly the opposite of what's needed. You know, suggestions and advice on what to do or not to do or say or not to say when supporting someone who is grieving are limited to their effectiveness. Why, you might ask, especially when so many years we were attempting to educate the non-bereaved to be of better support to those who are bereaved with exactly such advice and suggestions. You can actually find the internet full of those pages, 10 advice on how to be a better supporter. Even I wrote those kind of advice. The aim is to educate the non-bereaved and the bereaved to be a better support. It actually remains the same. And I actually wholeheartedly agree with Litsa and Eleanor from What's Your Grief when they say a true grief expert may understand concepts and theories and can bust grief myth, normalize and validate, but they also know when it comes down to understanding anyone's individual grief, they know very little, which they wrote in their February newsletter. What I do know, however, is that it comes down to this thing that I call person-centered grief support. So what does that mean? The person in the center is the bereaved person. As their support, we need to look at what is helpful to them and not what we learned or believe might be helpful. This is what I do as a grief support therapist. So when writing the book Bridging the Grief Gap, I interviewed many bereaved, asking them about their meaningful and helpful grief support. What became blatantly obvious is that it was so highly individualized. Some people, for example, they dreaded the generalized statement, "I'm so sorry for your loss." Some even said, "If I hear this sentence one more time, I'm going to scream." Others felt that if a person didn't say anything else but made an effort to connect and said, "I'm so sorry for your loss," it made a huge difference to them and they felt validated in their grief. This is just one example. I've collected hundreds and hundreds of statements from people describing what was helpful grief support versus what was unhelpful. Through my research, it became obvious that there are no generalized rules applicable to the masses of people dealing with the aftermath of loss. So, just simply, be human, stay connected. Another challenge is managing your own feelings while trying to be a pillar of support. It requires balance, ensuring that you're also taking care of your emotional well-being. Uneasiness or fear in the face of someone else's extreme emotions and tragic life experience is to be expected when one does not have the experience of significant loss. What is pivotal in these circumstances is to stay human and connected with the people who are reeling with their grief. Remember, it's in community we heal. In today's modern society, where everyone hides behind their screens, it requires a conscious decision to remain in contact with those that have faced loss, as well as your own emotional reaction to the intense situation. It takes courage. It is to be expected that your own emotional responses to grief, whether you're aware of your responses or reactions relating to a past situation, or whether it's unconscious, they will be stirred up, I promise you. It is normal and expected that you might cry too and that you might feel weighed down by the intensity of what you witness. It is equally okay that you might feel that you need to take a break after a certain time in the presence of this emotional vortex of loss to be able to recover from the intensity. Again, as I said in the beginning, I highly recommend downloading the 33 Steps Guide from my website, which is a simple guide that will teach you how you can be a better supporter, how you can be with yourself, with your emotions. It contains the collection of wisdom from my latest book, Bridging the Grief Gap. And so just go to my website and you can download it for free. You do not need to keep it together. You do not need to stay strong. You do not need to avoid your emotional reaction. You do not need to stuff down your tears. Experience your emotions, feeling vulnerable or maybe even weak, or feeling tearful. This is being human. and it is to be expected under the circumstances. In fact, it would seem insensitive not to experience all, or at least some of these responses. So in essence, stay present. I call this the art of presence, the ability to stay present in the face of extreme emotional turbulences, without needing to fix it, fade it, or avoid it. You see, all the responses described above are normal responses following loss. It is just that we have learned through societal condition not to express them publicly or to even avoid them when we are alone by staying busy, by keeping ourselves distracted, by numbing ourselves out, for example, through medication, alcohol, excessive work, sport, or any other activity such as, for example, shopping even. It's absolutely all about being present, listening without needing to fix things, and understanding that support often means simply being there, offering a safe space for emotions and thoughts to be expressed without necessarily needing to be explained. So here are some strategies for effective support. So because providing person-centered support means putting the needs and experiences of the person experiencing grief or trauma at the forefront. It is about asking how they prefer to be supported and respecting their process. Supporting someone through grief and trauma is a profound act of compassion that can also be emotionally challenging for the supporter. Witnessing a loved one or a client navigate the depth of their pain can evoke a complex mix of emotions, including sadness, anger, frustration, and helplessness. Understanding how to navigate these feelings in yourself is crucial for both the well-being of the supporter and the effectiveness of your support. So here we explore some strategies for you, the supporter, to deal with your own emotions and the feelings maybe of helplessness. So number one, acknowledge your feelings. Same for those experiencing grief and trauma. The first step in managing your emotions is to acknowledge them. It's natural to feel overwhelmed, sad, or even frustrated when you see someone you care for suffering. These feelings don't mean you're weak or ill-equipped to offer support. They signify your empathy and humanity. Recognize these emotions are valid responses to a challenging situation. Two, practice self-compassion. Just as we encourage those experiencing grief and trauma to practice self-compassion, supporters must do the same. Be kind to yourself and acknowledge that supporting someone through a difficult time is challenging. You are doing the best in a tough situation, and it's okay to not have all the answers. Which leads me to number three, set boundaries. Setting boundaries is essential for maintaining your emotional well-being. It's important to be present and available for the person you're supporting, but not at the expense of your health. Define clear limits on how much emotional weight you can bear and communicate these boundaries gently but firmly. This might mean setting aside specific times to offer support or taking breaks to recharge. Four, seek support for yourself. You know, supporters also need support, whether it's talking to a trusted friend, engaging in a support group for supporters, or seeking professional help. It's vital to have an outlet for your feelings, because sharing your experiencing as a supporter can provide perspective, reduce feelings of isolation, and offer strategies for coping. Remember, taking care of yourself isn't selfish. It's necessary to be a stable support for others. Grief and trauma therapists themselves have supervision where they debrief their sessions with their clients and their own feelings. It's normal. Five, engage in self-care activities. Engage in regular self-care activities that can help manage stress and prevent burnout. This might include physical activities, hobbies, mindfulness practices, or simply taking time to relax and do things you enjoy. Because even your self-care, it helps recharge your emotional batteries, which is so important, ensuring that you have the resilience to support the others. And six, educate yourself. You know, learning about grief and trauma, such as this podcast, and the healing process that goes along can help reduce your feelings of helplessness. Understanding what the person you're supporting might be going through can provide insight into how to offer meaningful support. It can also help normalize the range of emotions that you're experiencing, reducing your frustration and confusion. There are episodes after episode of therapists describing how they deal with their clients, what kind of therapy that they use. So educate yourself. There is plenty of opportunity right here on the podcast. 7. Practice active listening. Sometimes the most powerful support you can offer is your presence and your willingness to listen. So active listening is not just listening. It involves fully concentrating on what the other person is saying, understanding their message and responding appropriately, and remembering the information. It's about giving them the space to express their feelings without judgment, which can be extremely therapeutic. It also means allowing silence, allowing them to not say a word, to just be. 8. Accept the limitations of your role. You know, recognize that there are limits to what you can do as a supporter. You cannot take away the person's pain, nor can you speed up their healing process. In fact, do not try to. Accepting the limitations of your role can alleviate a feeling of helplessness and frustration. Because, and this is the most important, your role is to support, not to cure. Someone dealing with grief and trauma is not someone that needs to be cured. They need to be witnessed. And then celebrate small wins as 9. In the context of grief and trauma, progress can be slow and non-linear. Celebrate the small wins, both yours and those of the person you're supporting. Acknowledging moments of strength, resilience, and progress can be uplifting and reinforce the value of your support. Because supporting someone through grief and trauma is a journey marked by compassion, patience, and resilience. By taking care of your emotional well-being, setting boundaries, seeking support, and practicing self-compassion, you can navigate your feelings of helplessness and provide meaningful, empathetic support to those in need. As mentioned, there's many episodes in the podcast where therapists personally share how they themselves deal with their grief and trauma and how they support their clients. Check the episode overview page on the website to find episodes that speak to you. As we close today's episode, let's remember that at the heart of person-centered grief and trauma support is empathy. It's not about having all the answers, but about offering your presence and willingness to walk alongside someone in their darkest times. Again, your role is to support, not to cure. If you or someone you know is navigating grief or trauma, remember you're not alone. Share this resource of this podcast and the resources on the website with them. There are also resources and people ready to support you. Again, check on the website. There's a resource tab for links to professional support or support groups. You can also go to the show notes of this or any other episode to find useful links. Thank you so much for listening today. May we all carry forward a little more understanding and compassion into this world. Until next time, take care of yourself and each other.
Thanks for listening to How to Deal with Grief and Trauma. If you'd like to be updated on future episodes, please subscribe to my newsletter on nataliehimmelrich.com. If you need grief support, please contact me for a 30-minute free discovery session. How to Deal with Grief and Trauma is produced and edited by me, Natalie Himmelrich. To support this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe to or follow the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. And remember to keep reading. I promise it will get easier.